Welcome to This Is Money podcast in partnership with NS&I. I'm your host, Georgie Frost, and alongside editor Simon Lambert and I is assistant editor Lee Boyce. And coming up, we have a pre-budget special. What could be in that little red box, what should be, and what should definitely stay out. For the Tory party, why is this budget in particular so very important? Just how rude is the economy looking ahead of Brexit? And how big is the threat from Labour? Lord Sugar's threatening to leave the country if Jeremy Corbyn comes to power. Should we be equally worried? And don't forget, you can stay up to date with all the latest breaking money news. Just go to thisismoney.co.uk or download the app.
This is Money, brought to you in partnership with NS&I, where safer savings set you free.
So today we focus on the upcoming budget. At the end of the month, the Chancellor will stand up to deliver the last major fiscal announcement before Britain leaves the EU. If everything goes to plan, that is. Philip Hammond has a rather tough job ahead, reassuring us that the economy is safe in Conservative hands while warding off the threat from Jeremy Corbyn. Today we'll cut through the speculation to what could, should and should not be included. But first, Simon, why is this so particularly significant?
Because there is one word hanging over us, Brexit. We are getting a budget that actually is our first full-fat autumn budget after the dates have changed around. It used to be the autumn statement, now it's full-fat autumn budget and we're getting a spring statement. But also because we have Brexit hanging over us, we still don't know what the deal will look like, if there is a deal at all. And so the question is, what happens next to the UK economy? Everything is going okay at the moment. Not great, but not terrible. There is signs of businesses not investing. There are signs of consumers holding back. There are signs of house prices slowing dramatically in some parts of the country and falling in London and the commuter belt. So many of those things are put at the door of a sort of lack of confidence to do with Brexit. But actually, considering the warnings involved in Project Fear, everything's doing pretty fine. And so the question now is, do we get a deal that everyone's happy with, and do we get a bit of a bounce and everything picks back up? Or do we not get a deal and everyone panics and things take a sharp downturn and we get a recession? Or do those things reverse? We get a deal and then we end up with a recession, or we get no deal and everything goes absolutely swimmingly. Nobody really knows. So Philip Hammond is delivering this on an earlier date than everyone expected, and not just because he's decided for some lunatic reason to do it on a Monday rather than midweek, as it would normally be, but it was expected to be end of November. It is, in fact, end of October, apparently brought forward because of the whole Brexit negotiations. What's he going to do? Will he rock the boat? And will he rock the boat in a way that tries to pull back voters who are swinging towards Jeremy Corbyn and John McDonald's idea of for the many, not the few, and a socialist utopia? Or does he decide that the worst thing that the Conservative Party could possibly do is annoy all the people who are still voting for it at the moment?
Well, Lee, we're going to get into both of those issues, what could be in the little red box, but also, again, what happens if Jeremy Corbyn becomes the next Prime Minister. But what is your instinct telling you, given everything that Simon's just said there, is now a time to rock the boat? Is there anything really you can do? I mean, all attention is sort of with Brexit. I mean, it might be on Monday, a little bit of excitement, but then it'll probably be back to Brexit again.
I think it's very difficult to get the balance that's needed here to get the younger voters that are veering towards the Labour Party and getting policies and things in the budget that are going to appeal to them whilst also appeasing the older traditional Conservative voters. Where that balance comes is very difficult. It's a bit of a thankless task, really, isn't it, to try and attract the younger generation into voting Conservative while keeping the older generation on board, and then having that middle sort of age group who kind of veer towards one way or the other, and what you can do to attract those people and keep everyone happy. And it's quite difficult, and there's a number of political footballs that continue to get kicked around. And Brexit aside, I mean, for example, housing. Yeah. I mean, it's such a huge issue. On one side of the coin, you've got younger generations, a large percentage of people saying that they can't afford a house, can't afford a deposit, so you use stumbling block. It's very difficult to get on the housing ladder. A lot of younger people under the age of 35, want to get on the housing ladder, but are struggling. So what do you do to help them? Well, we've had all sorts of schemes in the past, but still younger generations are struggling to get on the property ladder. But at the same time, a lot of older Conservative voters will probably be property owners. They're probably NIMBYs, don't particularly want massive housing developments going up right outside their town, in which is already completely chock-a-block with traffic, doesn't have the infrastructure. So that's just one issue, and that's just one part of the jigsaw that this budget is going to have to look at also while juggling Brexit.
I was going to say, you mean there are other issues but Brexit that people are worried about? I'm shocked.
The thing is, this budget could go on for 6 hours. I mean, it's like, you know, we haven't had one for a while and there's all sorts of things to talk about. I don't know why it's been moved to a Monday. Answers on a postcard, because I've got no idea. Is it so there's no leaks because people over the weekend maybe not so... I don't know. It's very strange what's going to happen. But the other thing is, it is the lingering threat from Labour. And actually, Theresa May in the conference, you know, alluded to the fact quite a number of times, the lingering threat of Labour and Jeremy Corbyn.
Just to be clear, and we're going to talk about this in more detail. Did I miss something? Have we got another vote coming? General election? I mean, everybody's talking about the threat from Jeremy Corbyn becoming next Prime Minister. Haven't we got a budget and then Brexit, potentially, to get through first, unless there's a...
But as a leader of a political party, and as members of a political party, you'll be silly not to keep your eye on the ball and know that, you know, you can't just go, right, there's a general election next week, how are you voting? You've always got to have your eye on the threat. Now, the trouble is, there is this lingering threat from Labour, but I actually think the Tory party are really quite lucky at the moment. And the reason I say that is because I think if the opposition had a stronger leader, i.e. someone that wasn't Jeremy Corbyn, they would be in quite a lot of trouble right now. You know, there's still a lot of murmurings about, again, let's talk about the Labour Party here, about fighting about, should he really be the leader? Right, should he really be the leader of this party? There's a number of things that I think, well, he's quite old, really, to become the next Prime Minister. No, he is. He would be one of the oldest Prime Ministers in history.
Yeah. You know, I don't laugh because that's what you mentioned as to one of the issues that you're thinking about.
Right, no, but it's true.
But he still cuts through to younger people, seemingly. Yeah, seemingly, if what you read is true.
Exactly that. But then again, I'll talk about this massive group in the middle again that I think, you know, if you're floating voters, if there was a general election tomorrow, thank God there isn't, I genuinely think a large number of the population would have absolutely no idea who to vote for. Everything has got very cloudy. We've got all sorts of things on the boil, you know, including Brexit.
Yeah.
It's a real strange political landscape at the moment. And, you know, Chancellor George Osborne was always the master of rustling up something, a little rabbit in a hat, and, you know, do something that grab headlines.
Another ISA.
Yeah, another ISA. You know, it grabbed the headlines, and it sort of helped some of the more nasty stuff inside that budget kind of, you know, it'll still be picked up on, but it was sugarcoated a little bit, right? And our spreadsheet Phil, well, he's a completely different character to Mr. Osborne. And, you know, it's going to be interesting. You know, I look forward to a budget, Georgie. I like the budget. I find it a real sort of like, it's our Christmas day at this moment.
It is.
We love it.
And as much as this is not a political podcast, there are plenty of political podcasts out there. It is really about the money. But I do find it quite interesting talking about, you know, the young people vote, because I just think, Simon, you know, this idea of the threat from Labour and what the Conservatives can do in this budget, is there realistically anything you can do? You know, chuck young people a rail card. Well, they think you've just ruined their futures with Brexit. I mean, it's a hard sell.
It is.
A rail card's not a bad idea, generally, for young people, perhaps.
And I think that it's worth reflecting in a minute when we start to go through some of the things that are being suggested. As we talk about them, it might be worth reflecting on this, because I'm going to reflect on this afterwards, is that actually many of the policies that are being put forward as being favourable to young people because they involve taking some money off those who are perceived to be older and wealthier, will actually end up being unfavourable to young people and remove things from them that our parents' generation enjoyed for the whole of their working lives. And actually will probably end up costing young people money. So I think it's worth bearing that in mind when you listen to some of the things that get levied as a kind of like, let's go after these older homeowner baby boomers with all the money, is that actually it's going to affect younger people as well, and it's going to involve taking a load of money off them through the whole of their working lives.
Okay. And as you rightly said, Simon, we'll be getting into more of those sort of policy ideas in a short while. But let's just put the Labour Party threat to bed for a little bit, because you do have an article on your website which looks particularly at, you know, what you can do to protect your family should Labour win the next election. Now, I'm just imagine people listening who are Labour supporters absolutely screaming at that sort of title. But hold fire for a moment, because this is off the back of this interesting intervention that we got, didn't we, from Lord Sugar earlier in the month. At one time himself a big Labour Party donor, who said that, and of course he's the apprentice star, the businessman, that he will quit the UK if Jeremy Corbyn becomes the next Prime Minister. He is so worried about the barrage of tax rises and other stuff that we've been hearing over the last couple of months. So this is not us talking about our political preferences here. This is an article based on should what is feared happen in terms of taxes, and if this will affect you, what you can do. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, it's talking about people who... bear in mind, this is talking about people who have money and people protecting their wealth. Now, the Labour Party has made it clear that it intends to go after the wealthy and make them pay what it feels is their fair share. Whether this amounts to soak the rich, I suppose, depends upon your view on things. It does miss an important nuance in that actually the wealthy do actually pay most of the tax in this country, and that there is a lot of debate about whether the people who are going to actually get caught up in this are not the people who are super rich. It's not going to be the people earning £500,000, £1 million, a couple of million pounds a year, because they're quite difficult targets to take down. They have access to the kind of accountants and resources and the kind of international lifestyle that means that they can shift money around and reduce their tax bills quite substantially. Or, you know, they might be employed through their own company and things like that. This is probably going to hit the people who are earning between 50,000 and maybe, you know, lots of money, a couple of hundred thousand pounds a year. But mainly those people who are earning that money and earn it through PAYE. And so therefore, they're an easy target and they're easy to go after. And actually, those people are paying an awful lot of tax at the moment. So you do have to kind of convince them. If you want them to pay more, you have to convince them that you're playing fair. And I'm not sure that this argument wins over. The last manifesto we had from Labour, we were going to get another tax rate, 45p tax rate. The 45p tax rate was going to go up to 50p, but we weren't going to remove the bit where you take people's personal allowances off them between 100 and 120. That's loads of money. People earning that kind of money, earning loads of money, but they do end up paying a 60% tax rate. And how are you going to convince those people that it's only fair for them to pay a bit more if they know that at one point you're unfairly hitting them with a 60% tax rate? But you're going to have that. There is the threat to pension tax relief, that would be lowered. And then there's the threat of a wealth tax, which we'll talk about in a minute. Various other elements here. So if you want to avoid this kind of thing, changing inheritance tax as well, you need to act now. It's just a simple statement of fact.
Okay. If those policies come in, that would be good anyway, right, even if they don't, right? Is that what you're saying?
Exactly, yes. Right. So firstly, would they dismantle the ISA system? Probably not. It might lower the amount that you can put in there. £20,000 a year is a lot to be able to stash into your ISA. So arguably, if you've got some ISA allowance, use it now. Put the money in now. Will they hack back at pension tax relief, lower the lifetime allowance, lower the annual allowance? Strong possibility of that. If you've got money you want to put into your pension, put it in there now. Are we going to see inheritance tax changed? Again, we'll come on to this in a minute. Whilst the Tories are meant to be streamlining inheritance tax, Labour are very strongly aligned with this Institute for Public Policy Research report recently, which called for inheritance tax to be abolished and replaced with a lifetime gift tax on all gifts received during a person's life over a certain amount, set initially at £125,000. Above that, you would pay income tax. So if you do want to give money away to your family, at the moment you give it away, they live 7 years, it's inheritance tax free, and there is £1 million inheritance tax allowance, probably best to use some of it now. So it's just saying to people that if you do read about these things and you are concerned about them and you think, I don't want to pay more than I have to, or I think I already pay enough, then do something about it. If you think, no, actually I'm lucky and the country needs more money and the NHS needs more money and I'm happy to sit around and wait and pay more tax in the future under a different prospective government, then do that too.
This is Money, brought to you in partnership with NS&I Premium Bonds, giving you the chance every month to win up to £1 million tax-free.
Now to the little red box and what could be inside. What can we expect? Let's have a little bit of a rundown. Lee, I'm going to come to you first as you brought it up. So I'm just going to throw some things out at you. You give me a little bit of a response, then you can add your own. Then the floor is yours, Chancellors Lee and Simon. So, Lee, as you mentioned it first, I'm going to come to the housing part to you. Just very briefly, the Institute of Fiscal Studies produced their 2018 Green Budget. That was looking at the troubling situation, which what you mentioned for aspiring young homeowners. 40% can't afford even the cheapest property in their areas, they were suggesting. We also got an idea from the Onward think tank. They're a right-wing think tank for this good landlord tax. And Will Help to Buy, which is something we've been talking about. The scheme be scrapped after 2021 and replaced with something else. Lee, how important is housing then? You mentioned it, so you must think it's very important.
Well, it is. It's one of those issues in which people are really quite vocal about it, especially in the last 12 to 18 months. I feel like it really has become like the topic. You know, it's if you can't get on the property ladder type thing now, it's going to be almost impossible in the future because house prices actually still continue to sort of tick along. Maybe not quite as quickly as they were a couple of years ago, but at the same time, wages are kind of not growing at any kind of pace to cope with that. And especially we're in a situation, especially in the southeast, in which it is so difficult to get onto the property ladder. Okay, we've got the Help to Buy scheme, but you know, it's still very hard to
until 2021, and even that's come in for a lot of criticism for pushing up house prices.
Exactly. So has that been the answer? Well, you look at the evidence the last few years. So this Green Budget paper, it kind of analyses the issues and challenges that faces Philip Hallamand, and housing formed a big part of it. And they were talking about, for example, how stamp duty for first-time buyers was obviously removed, and stamp duty for landlords
temporarily,
And for landlords and for second home buyers, it's been increased. But the upshot of that is that the policies risk increasing house prices or rents or both. So that's what's been going on anyway. So there was this whole thing about doing that. And actually, we're now looking at the evidence going, well, it's not really done what they kind of expected. And house prices still continue to tick along. And it still hasn't solved the issue of younger people potentially getting on the housing ladder. And it's a generational thing as well. Because you think back into the sort of 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, you had your job, you had your wage, house prices kind of four or five times earning, and it was easier to get on the property ladder. But we're now in a situation in which there are pockets of the country in which, let's face it, a lot of people want to live because, let's talk about London, for example, that it is a hub for jobs. It's now becoming a near impossible task for a first-time buyer to buy in London, let alone into the outskirts of London, into the commuter belt. How you solve that? Well, again, there was this whole noise about building more houses. We need to build more houses. But then there's evidence that that pushes up house prices. And that doesn't actually solve the issue of house prices coming down.
And we've
down.
Never so, actually done very well at that, have we?
No, exactly. You know, there's always been a lot of red tape and a lot of things going on. And you rightly said there as well about the Help to Buy scheme. So you can buy with a 5% deposit. And that's running until 2021. But there's a lot of developers now that are starting projects today with post 2021 completion dates. So how's that all going to that going to be phased? How are people can people still be able to buy these properties with that? And then there's been this whole good landlord proposal, as you mentioned there, which the simplistic way to say this is that it will reward investors who sell properties to sitting tenants. But
after three years,
that's good. But what will the incentive be?
It's talking about capital gains tax, isn't it? You'll get a windfall, that'll be split between you and the tenant.
And that's it's an interesting concept, but I just can't see it happening. But
I know this is a quick fire round, but I do think that this housing issue is going to be the big one. It's an easier political win. In fact, it's probably shooting yourself in the foot if you don't mention the housing crisis, given what Lee said about young people. Simon, what do you think?
I was just going to say that I've always liked to think that Chancellors present and past listen to the This Is Money podcast. And the good landlord scheme bears a startling resemblance to something that I suggested a while ago while we were chatting about housing and buy-to-let and landlords and first-time buyers on this podcast, which I called Help to Sell. And the idea was that whilst discouraging landlords from buying new properties with extra stamp duty, you should also encourage them to sell properties by cutting the capital gains tax for them, and that they could just slowly sell them to their tenants. So enable their tenants to slowly buy them over time, and you give them a capital gains tax cut. And lo and behold,
Yeah, you did.
A similar idea pops.
So I'm not going to ask you if you think that's a good idea, Simon, because clearly you do. It was your idea. Talking of capital gains tax, generally increasing rates, bring it in line with inheritance tax. What are we expecting to happen here? Anything?
No, because we only just reduced the rate of capital gains tax apart from on property. So it would seem strange to put it back up again, but we might do. There is a reason why capital gains tax is lower than income tax, however, and that is because capital gains tax is meant to reward people taking entrepreneurial risk or investment risk. You're not taking that much risk by going to work. Your employer agrees to pay you some money. You're not the one taking the risk. Your employer is actually taking the risk by doing business. Whereas if you do some business yourself, you, even if it's just buying some shares or buying a property or something like that, you are taking an entrepreneurial risk, and that is why it's lower. I would find it very unlikely they would put it up to income tax levels unless they reintroduced something called taper relief, which used to exist, which meant that the longer you held an asset, the less capital gains tax you paid. Now, there is an argument that says that that is a more sensible way to structure such a tax than the current flat rate system because it rewards long-term ownership. But I doubt we'll go back to that.
Okay. Inheritance tax, you just mentioned. The government had commissioned the Office for Tax Simplification to review this whole area, didn't you? So what are we expecting to happen here?
Well, inheritance tax has become fiendishly complex and also has a number of very outdated reliefs.
And always unpopular.
And always unpopular, despite the fact that actually most people don't pay it. But people don't like the concept. Inheritance tax is what I would refer to as one of the big three potential ones in this budget. Or one big three potential ones in this budget and related to the whole Labour Party thing at the moment, where you've got Labour at John McDonnell. You can say whatever you like about him, but he's an ideas man, okay? And he's breathing down the Conservatives' neck on this stuff. So inheritance tax, they want to streamline it. You've got this own residence extra relief that was brought in above the 650 level for a couple, which is 325 per individual. You can double it up as a married couple or civil partners. It adds an extra level of complexity. Arguably, the Tories should have just, if they wanted to raise it to a million, they should have just raised it to a million. You have to leave it to a direct descendant. Brings in all kinds of like little unfair scenarios that you can think of. Siblings living together who don't have a direct descendant, things like that, who don't even get to pass the original bit between them. I think maybe they'll just get rid of that and make it £1 million. But then they will get accused of throwing this as a sop to the wealthy. What they probably will do is streamline the gifting. So at the moment, you can give away up to £3,000 a year. If you can give away more than that, if you survive for 7 years and so on, you can only give away £5,000 for someone who gets married. Marriages are quite expensive and £5,000 doesn't really cover it. Various other things. There's talk of them just introducing a £10,000 a year inheritance tax-free gifting allowance per person and possibly leaving the rate the same above that, maybe changing the threshold, removing the own home thing. Again, I don't think they'll mess with it too much because I don't think that they'll want to really upset people. The more radical idea is this IPPR suggestion where you just axe it altogether and you bring in a lifetime gifting amount that people can receive of £125,000 above which they pay income tax. Now, that's the kind of thing that you might see the Labour Party bring in. This is where we go back to the thing where I said this is going to actually cost young people money, because we see this as a tax on the older generation who've got these houses that are worth lots of money, particularly in certain parts of the country. They're not actually going to benefit from those when they die because they will be dead. The people who will benefit from those when they die will be the younger generation. And as it stands, you could give away a £650,000 estate and then up it all the way up to £1 million. So someone living in a £500,000 house could give that to their two children free of inheritance tax, their two children who haven't benefited from the same number of years of stratospheric house price inflation, and they'd get £250,000 tax free. You change it away, change it around to this way, and it goes down to £125,000. There's also an element here where this rewards large families. That means you could give away more inheritance tax free, or as the concept works at the moment, if you had four kids than if you had two and things like that. Or you give it to more people. I don't know. I just think it's very controversial. And I actually think it'll end up costing the younger generation who are going, well, at least we'll eventually inherit some of this money, because actually they will get the chance to inherit less and have more tax charged on it. The other big one is pension tax relief. So we need some money for the NHS. There's been talk in the last few days. There's talk before every budget. Pension tax relief will get hacked back at. At the moment, you get it at your rate of income tax. The principle is simple. You pay into your pension from untaxed income. There's an argument for turning it into a flat rate, perhaps 30%, perhaps 25%, because it's seen to be that high earners disproportionately benefit from this. There is the counter argument that high earners disproportionately benefit from this because they pay more tax in the first place. So therefore, if they pay in from untaxed income, of course they get a bigger benefit. Again, could happen, definitely more likely to happen under a Labour government, and will cost younger people money because our parents' generation benefited from being able to save into a pension from untaxed income throughout their entire working lives. But ours will probably see it axed at some point.
Lee, shaking your head there.
I just think, hands off our pensions, Phil. There's people that are 20, 30, 40 years old that we're going to get to state pension age. Is there going to be a state pension? Constantly being told, hammer home, save into a private pension, auto-enrolment. That is not a great signal to send out to people that are meant to be saving for their retirement, is it? I mean, that is a sure vote loser in my mind. I mean, at the end of the day, yes, we need to find extra funding from the NHS. Tinkering with pensions is one of those things that you do it and I think you just wait for the backlash.
Is it because they think that, you know, pension sounds like it's an old person thing that young people won't notice?
Quite possibly, but I think a lot of younger people now are starting to take control of their pensions way more than they ever have done before because of auto-enrolment, and people are actually interested in seeing their annual statement, seeing how much money that they're saving from their income, how much that might be boosted from their employer, and going, actually, do you know what, this whole pension malarkey is a pretty good thing. Start tinkering with that and start saying, well, actually, do you know what, we need to fund this gap. I think it's a very dangerous territory to start treading in and to start saying that, right, safety, by the way, now we're making this less, you know, appealing to you, by the way, you're probably not going to have a state pension. Great. I mean, what is it you want us to actually do? It's absolutely crazy. But at the same time, I know that finding £20 billion that Theresa May has promised for the NHS, you can't just magic it out of nowhere. So it's kind of like, who do you penalise? And it's kind of hard because they were talking about fuel duty, for example, and there was a whole hoo-ha about that going up you know, a little bit more because it's been frozen for so many years. Actually, there was a big backlash at that. But you're right, you say pensions. It doesn't seem to be as much of a backlash before, but if it happens, I mean, I'll tell you now, it will be... It won't be pretty reading.
We always say this. It sounds like, you know, the robbing Peter to pay Paul thing. Whatever happens, it's got to come from somewhere. But Simon, what else have we got on the list before we move on to your ideas? Actually, we've got to be careful about telling you to give some ideas because you never know who's listening, right?
Okay, the final one of the big three I was going to mention, and this is something that I doubt very highly that the Tory party would consider bringing in, but is a much more likely to happen under a Labour government, is a wealth tax of some form. The idea has been put forward that people should pay a wealth tax. There is the idea of the wealth tax or the land value tax. The one that's been put forward by the IPPR, 0.5% on the market value of your property each year, and that would replace council tax. Now, on average, that would only see bills go up by a small amount, but of course, in some parts of the country, for a sizable number of people who have already had to take out huge mortgages just to live in their local area and are also suffering from some of the country's highest living costs, it would be a huge sum of money. Mm. I mean, think about that first-time buyer who scrimped and saved in London to buy that 500 grand flat. And then they get whacked with £2,500 a year on it instead of their council tax, which is probably about £1,000 a year now. But the idea is that you should tax property because it's very difficult to move. And people have to pay the tax. It's very difficult to dodge. There's all kinds of elements here that are open for it being skewed and giving weird biases towards certain things. Definitely not one that I can see Philip Hammond bringing in because he's going to alienate the large number of people still voting for his, still considering voting for his party. But definitely one I could see the Labour Party bringing in. But there would be absolute uproar across London and the South East as people suddenly got walloped with bills of thousands of pounds a year. And of course, we must remember that just because you do have an expensive house does not mean that you have the ready cash to pay bills.
Of course not.
I've always personally thought that it's better to tax people's income because there is a direct relationship between your income and your ability to pay the tax.
I was going to say, do you think Lord Sugar would still stay in the country if there was a wealth tax brought in from the Conservative Party?
I think Lord Sugar, if he really wants to do something about this, can take a leaf out of another famous apprentice host's book, and maybe he could just take charge of the country.
Oh, wow, there's an idea. On that note, the floor is yours, Chancellor Simon and Lee. Just one thing, because we don't want to go on too long, because this is, after all, a bit of speculation, because we'll get the final thing on a random Monday. But what would be the one thing that you would focus on? Now, I know, Lee, that you've you've spoken about housing, so you can pick something else.
I'm going to pick something else. And in fact, Georgie, I'm going to pick two things for you very briefly touched on it. One of the things I think would be a real surefire winner, this is real Tory heartlands here, commuter belt, right? It's a real Tory heartland. We've had it all in for train passengers. It's been an absolutely torrid time over the last few years. The one simple change that could be made is that instead of train fare rises going up with RPI, an outdated measure of inflation, they should be going up with CPI instead, right? So I crunched some figures. And over the last 6 years, if it was done via CPI rather than RPI, train fares would be 8% lower right now. On a £5,000 season ticket, that is huge. Why they don't change it, I don't know. It's something I've asked for, and I've asked for reasons why, and I don't ever really get a solid answer. And on that note as well, I think £5,000 is just about a cap that should be for an annual season ticket, right? That's my first thing.
Can I add to that? You should get a reduction at the end, or a little bonus if you've got a season ticket, related to the performance rating. So if you've got a 75% target, and if you're Southern Rail, then you get a 25% bonus.
It's not a bonus, it's a refund. It should be and you're totally right, it should be linked more to how well the train company's operating.
And it should be performance related as well. It should not have to automatically go up, because I'm sorry.
Yeah, and they'll say, well, there's the delay repay scheme and you can go through that, but I mean, at the end of the day, my train operator is still working on a half an hour delay, so if it's any less than that, and that can still, if it's a 28 minute delay, I tell you what, it's still frustrating. But you know, that aside, I just think that RPI thing would be such an easy winner for conservative, you know, heartlands out in those counties, especially in London and the southeast, in which people are commuting into London, right? And the second thing I would say, and I really do believe this, I think there needs to be a rescue plan for the high street. There needs to be some sort of battle action plan. Charge online firms more tax. Encourage more independent shops with some sort of tax break or business rate relief. We'll go back full circle to our last podcast, but make parking easier and cheaper around town centres. Otherwise, I'm telling you now, 5 years' time, the high street is just completely dead. It's already withering and dying away, and it is about to completely go.
All right, some good proposals there from Lee. Chancellor Simon Lambert, be careful, people are listening.
Well, Lee had two ideas, so I'm just going to chuck in my first one quickly, which is related to his first one. I think people should be able to salary sacrifice their rail season tickets. I think they're using them to get to work. They should be able to salary sacrifice them. That would save them a huge amount of money. And it maybe will go towards making up for some of the stuff they're going to get hit with on the wealth tax. Mm-hmm. But I think the thing that I would want to do as Chancellor is stand up and be honest with people and say, look, we need some more money coming in, OK? We need some more money coming in for the NHS in particular. And we have agreed that we are going to spend some more money on that because that's what you want. As part of that, we are going to introduce this ring-fenced NHS tax. And we're going to do it in this way that means it works and it doesn't cause all the problems that a ring-fenced tax can be. But in return for that, we are going to be more honest with you with the tax system. We are going to remove some of the traps and bits that people hate. We are going to deal with that weird 60% effective tax rate for those people who fall between 100 and 120, because we want to convince high earners that it's fair for them to pay a bit more tax. And the way to do that is to play fair with them. We are going to sort out this universal credit mess, which means that low earners are suddenly finding themselves in real trouble because of the way that this is being introduced. And we are going to make sure that the tax thresholds rise with inflation each year, and we're not going to indulge in any more fiscal drag. And I think that if you balance that, we need some more money and we're going to ask you for it here to pay for this thing that you want and that you support, and we're going to play fair with you there, I think people would appreciate that message.
All right, then. Well, we shall see. Now, if you have any views on this podcast, if you have any proposals and you want to play mini chancellor yourself, Simon, how can people get in contact?
Email philip.hammond@gov.
There's still time, people.
Don't do that. That's not his real email address. Email us at editor@thisismoney.co.uk if you have a problem that you would like us to try and solve for you. Tweet us at thisismoney. Come to thisismoney.co.uk/podcast to find all the podcast articles and join in the conversation in reader comments.
Thank you very much. You can stay up to date with all the latest breaking money news. Just go to thisismoney.co.uk or download the app. And if you like our podcast, why not rate us on iTunes? It helps people find us.
This is Money, brought to you in partnership with NS&I Premium Bonds, creating millions of reasons to celebrate every month.